The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Saver Card. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, 2% at grocery stores, and 1% on all other purchases.
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Is it smoke? Is it fire? Is it BS? Is Tua falling? It's Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. Who's rising? Who's falling? What's happening in the NFL draft? That's kind of just a moment with one of our ESPN NFL draft analysts, Jim Nagy, here on the Will Cain Show. Also, coming up in this hour, let's talk about that lost generation. If everything's on pause and everybody's at home, we know we're homeschooling. We know we might not have professional sports. We know that college sports could be in complete jeopardy. What about youth sports? When do we get our kids back on the soccer field together? When does basketball, football, tennis for 10, 11, 12, 14 high school age kids return? Because if it doesn't, is it not a lost generation? At least a lost year for everyone in youth sports. That, and is Joe Burrow truly confident, or is he masking some kind of insecurity? Is he Steve Young, or is he Baker Mayfield? That's all coming up this hour on the Will Cain Show. But joining me now is the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, ESPN NFL draft analyst, also part of day three coverage of the draft on ESPN Radio. It's Jim Nagy on my phone lines. What's up, Jim?
Hey, Will, how's it going?
I like day three. I like day three almost as much as I like day one, Jim. I think you got a fun job there. This is the draft is fun stuff. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's no doubt, Will. I love it. I love that you love it too, because those are, as a former scout, that's where you make your bread and butter is on day three. That's where you build your football team, and that's where as a scout you can kind of build your own resume. So day three is fun. I mean, I know a lot of people don't know those names, but I sure like talking about them.
Man, I always say this when it comes to fantasy football. You can't win your draft in the first round, but you can lose it. You win your draft in rounds 3, 4, and 5 when you can find value that others cannot. Same in real football, I imagine. Which, by the way, I'm going to put that to you. I'm going to put that exact mantra, that cliche to you when it comes to real football. Do you think it's true that you can't win the Super Bowl in the first round, but you can lose your franchise? Meaning, if that's the case, it's better to be safe than sorry. It's better to go with less risk, even if it means less reward. What it might mean is Justin Herbert over Tua Tagovailoa. The NFL teams think the same way.
Well, I think you can win it if you find that quarterback. But no, you definitely build your team through those middle rounds. That 3, 4, 5, 6. I mean, that's really, you know, the backbone of your football team. It's where your depth is. And again, I don't think what most people realize is just the attrition that happens on an NFL roster over the course of a year. Maybe if you play fantasy and you know, your stud running back goes down or something. But I was talking to a buddy of mine that works in a front office the other day, and they said like 30-some% of their opening day roster was turned over by the end of the year, was on injured reserve. So you really got to find that depth. Again, if you hit on those guys in the mid rounds and they become good players, what it allows you to do from a cap standpoint, and again, just speaking on my own experience, you know, being in Seattle, when you hit on Richard Sherman in the fifth round or sixth round and Cam Chancellor late and Doug Baldwin is an undrafted free agent, you can go out and spend money in a lot of other areas for a long time. So to get those guys on cheap rookie deals in the mid rounds is absolutely crucial.
But go to the other side of that cliche I gave you. So you can't win it, but you can lose it in the first round. Now, I know if you draft Peyton Manning first overall, you want it. But my point is, it's sort of the risk tolerance thing. So we'll make it in real world terms, okay? Tua, I think, represents the idea, hey, I might have a quarterback here who can go win me the Super Bowl. And maybe Herbert can as well, but Herbert represents less risk, obviously, in the health perspective. Do you think most teams in that first round look at it and go, let's just not bust? We may not get a top five quarterback in the NFL, but let's not bust here. Or is it always go for the potential of the top five guy?
You know, Will, it's not like the probably not the answer you're looking for, but I think it just comes down to the individual general manager and
right.
you know, how big a set he has. You know, there's some right. guys that like to gamble and put it all out there and you know, make trades and you know, wheel and deal, and there's other guys that do play it safe. And again, sometimes it's because they're in self-preservation mode and they're making moves to keep staying their job. But, you know, like in terms of this year's class, I really feel like, you know, the smart thing to do would be, you know, to me, I don't think you're gambling. I don't think you're playing it safe by taking Justin Herbert. Let me just say it that way. Like, to me, that's not playing it safe. I think that he's the smart pick. I really feel that way. Even after watching all the tape and all things being equal, I think he's a good pick. You know, if the Dolphins picked him at 5, that's a good pick. I mean, this guy's going to be a really good player. The league, there are so many guys that are excited about, like, what this guy could be in, like, 2 or 3 years. I mean, that's even going back to being at the Manning camp with him last summer, you know, being around a lot of those instructors that were there, these guys that coach that position for a living. Like, we sat around one night, and they're like, man, can you believe that Herbert kid? Like, he's still so raw. Like, what's that guy going to be in a couple of years? So, yeah, just pulling it back to this year's draft. But you're right. Yeah, some guys do play it a little safe, I would think, but there are guys that take their shot.
Well, let's follow that trail. Jim Nagy here on the Will Cain Show. So listening to you talk about Herbert like that and hearing that the league shares a similar feeling to you about Herbert, I'm gathering there could be not just smoke but fire to the idea that Tua could be sliding lower than any of us anticipated.
Yeah, I don't think that's a smoke screen at all. And again, I love Tua. I've seen this kid play 8 times live over the last 2 years. I really like him as a player. I think he'd be a really good starter if healthy. And hopefully he is Brett Favre. Hopefully he's the guy that a lot of teams had, you know, failed his medical, and he plays 280 straight games. I hope that happens for him. But it's not just the hip. It's not just the accumulation of injuries. It's when you watch the tape, this guy absorbs a lot of heavy contact. And again, like going back to my experience in Seattle, Russell Wilson had a knack for getting out of harm's way, whether it's, you know, sliding or ducking out of bounds or just like, you know, getting a glancing blow. Whereas unfortunately, Tua's got the opposite knack of he absorbs a lot of heavy contact. And, you know, it's almost on a per game basis. And he's doing that behind a line that, you know, you look at this year's class. So Jedrick Wills is going to go in the top half of the first round. Next year, they've got their left tackle, center, and guard. We've all graded for next year's Senior Bowl as day two guy. One is a first rounder. The other two is third rounders. And then the other kid is the youngest one who people up in Tuscaloosa think might be the best one. So he's getting hit a ton behind an offensive line that is going to have more high draft picks than most any offensive line in the National Football League. So that's the kind of stuff you have to be talking about when you're talking about this Tua injury. It's just not the hip. It's not the accumulation. It's like, what are we seeing on tape, too? He gets hit a lot.
Well, Jim, is it more than just the injuries and the hits? I talked to a couple of guys, Matt Miller and Lance Zierlein, who do some scouting and film review. They said they've also heard people saying, beyond the offensive line, which you just rattle off, and just for a moment, we shall sit back and talk about how astounding that is, that offensive line, full of top picks next year as well. But it's the weapons. I mean, you've got, you've got 2 first-round wide receivers this year. That leaves still Devontae Smith and Waddle, right, at Alabama. And the point is, Tua's had amazing weapons around him the whole time. So it's a little bit, I heard these guys say this, people are wondering, is Tua not a product of the system, but my gosh, had everything you could ever want to succeed at his fingertips. Do you hear guys talking about that too?
You have to. You have to do that. The quarterback position is such a dependent position. You have to evaluate everything around that one player. So you brought up Devontae Smith. He was the most productive guy they had this year. I saw them play 5 times, and he had 800 yards in the 5 games I was at. Jalen Waddle, next year, I mean, he's the most dynamic one of all those guys in terms of playmaking ability and change of direction and punt returns. And then the running back with Najee Harris and a kid named Brian Robinson, who not many people have heard of, that running back room is probably better than most NFL running back rooms. So, yeah.
So, Jim, really quickly, just really quickly. So you just named – let's see, 2 first-rounders and 2 potential second- or third-rounders on the offensive line, potentially 4 first-round wide receivers at his disposal, and Najee Harris as his running back. It doesn't get better right. than that.
No, and Will, that's what teams are trying to do. They're envisioning, okay, what would Herbert look like in that offense? What would Jordan Love look like in that offense? And LSU's as well. You know, Joe Burrow had great weapons too. So that's the kind of stuff you have to look at when you're evaluating these quarterbacks. It's all around them. And you just take it back to the last two games of the year. Mac Wilson comes in at the end of the year, and they played two really good defenses, Auburn and Michigan, both loaded with NFL players. And Mac Jones throws for over 650 yards and seven touchdowns, and they score 80 points in those two games.
Right.
So that offense still functioned at a really, really high level. So taking nothing away from Tua, these are the conversations that are being had in draft rooms right now about that quarterback.
Okay, I want to go just a little bit longer with Jim Nagy here. It's going to make my break push just a little bit, but I got to follow up with two things. Why then, and you brought it up, don't those same conversations seem to be punishing Joe Burrow? Because, let's see, what is it? Cushenberry, the center, is probably a third-round pick, maybe a second-round pick. Of course, Justin Jefferson's a first-round pick at wide receiver. Ja'Marr Chase next year will be a first-round pick at wide receiver. Clyde Edwards-Hilaire at running back is probably, what, a second- or third-rounder, this guy? Thaddeus Moss, he'll be a late pick this year, tight end. Everywhere you look, the point is, he's got also, maybe not quite what Tua had, but he had something pretty close to it, so why don't we do this with Burrow?
No, and teams are doing it. Teams are doing it, just like last year. Same thing with Kyler Murray at Oklahoma and Dwayne Haskins at Ohio State. I mean, those guys are tough evals because every time those quarterbacks, every time Dwayne Haskins took the field last year, his people were better than the people he was playing against. Every time Joe Burrow took the field this year, except for maybe Alabama, his people were better. So that's why some of these other guys, you know, the Daniel Joneses of the world, who's lining up at Duke with a bunch of future accountants and doctors, and, you know, or, you know, Justin Herbert, even at Oregon, or Jordan Love at Utah State, who's not lining up with any future NFL players. I mean, they're almost an easier eval because they're playing in chaos. They're playing in situations that mirror the NFL, whereas some of these other guys, there's so much talent around them. That's not what the NFL is all about. Just dropping back and flat footing in a clean pocket and picking out wide open receivers, that's not the NFL game, and that's really what makes the Tua eval a little difficult.
Right. Last thing with Jim Nagy here, ESPN NFL draft analyst. You really like Herbert, that's clear. Will you do for me really quickly what Mel Kiper was asked? If I gave you last year's draft as well, so you've got Joe Burrow, Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, where does Justin Herbert fit in that hierarchy for you?
Oh, that's a good one. Kyler was really hard to do, honestly, because there's never been one like such. You know, he's never been one like him. Burrow would be at the top of that group for me. Herbert would be. It would be right in there. He'd be right in there with Daniel Jones. Probably, you know, Kyler too, because of that situation. I mean, Kyler's hard because he went to a situation that was custom made for him with, you know, with the head coach in Arizona. I don't know if he would be the same with other teams. So he's really a hard guy to talk about in that vein. But Justin and Daniel Jones have some similarities. Both big guys, both athletic. You know, Herbert's got a bigger arm, but they're both extremely tough, extremely smart. Didn't play with a lot around him in college. So that's kind of where they'd fit.
Okay, really, really good conversation. I enjoyed that, Jim. I appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Will.
All right, it's ESPN NFL Draft Analyst and Executive Director of Reese's Senior Bowl, Jim Nagy, here on the Will Cain Show. Okay, let's do that. Let's play a game of over-under with win totals in the NFL, and let's address, what about that lost generation due to this quarantine? That's coming up on the Will Cain Show.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges, like over-tipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
I just don't think we can fully appreciate the ripple effects of shutting everything down. Now, when you hear that, you're probably going to hear, here goes Will talking about we need to get back to work. I mean, at some point. But I also think we need to prepare for what's changed. And what's changed is almost incalculable. College football, maybe not coming back. College sports, destroyed. Shortened pro seasons. And what about youth sports? That's all coming up on the Will Cain Show. But Jerry from Jersey has been hanging out. What's up, Jerry?
Well, what's going on?
You know, a little this, a little that, Jerry. What about you?
Not much, you know. I want to get right into it here. And I'm sorry if I get a little emotional today. So a couple days ago, I got a buddy down the street, Nicky Numbers, my best friend, big Cowboys fan, sends me a message via text with a picture of Dak Prescott and Dez Bryant working out. So I don't pay it too much, you know, I don't pay it no mind. And then he sends me an article a couple days later, right, of Zeke and Dak Prescott at a dinner party together. And now in that same message, he says, Jared, listen, I miss you. I miss coming down the street. I miss hanging out, watching sports, throwing back a few bottles of suds. I said, Nick, I miss it too. And what pisses me off is, what are these guys doing in Dallas? You got people around the world dying from this virus. And you got Dak Prescott and Zeke Elliott together at a party? That's a good example, huh, Will? A real good example. That's pathetic.
No, it's not,
that's
Jerry.
Pathetic.
Yeah, and I've said, and so I've said that. I have said this is a bad decision-making, this is bad responsibility, and it's bad leadership. Pat here, who's working on the show, you don't think I went hard enough, right, Pat? You don't like how I said it?
It's not that I don't, like, I think you ended up at the right place and that he did the wrong thing. I just think that saying that we shouldn't be able to point it out when someone's doing something wrong while everyone else is trying to do the right thing is, I guess, I don't know what the right word is, hypocritical maybe, but I think we should be allowed to be the ones to point the finger and say, you shouldn't be doing that, and it's not right that you are.
I sometimes react to the reaction, and I do think a little bit we all get a little bit schoolmarmy, hall monitor, tattletale-ish on this stuff, and be like, take our own virtue and pointing out other people. And I don't think most people are totally quarantining themselves and isolating themselves from everybody in the society. That doesn't excuse Dak. It just makes me be like, hey, man, those who live in glass houses may not throw rocks. Now, Jerry, you're telling me you don't live in a glass house and you haven't socialized at all, so you have harsh words for them. And they can get harsh words, but sometimes I just get a little bit like, okay, all right, we've done enough finger-pointing and yelling about somebody who's defied our social conventions.
Will, listen. You know what happened? Listen, I got a union job. I'm an essential worker right now. We had a big meeting the other day. The big bosses came down. They supplied us with masks and gloves. And they said, listen, we're going to be handing it out as needed. And you know what that guy said, the big boss who runs the whole show? He said to me, and he said to everybody there, he said, listen, if I catch one of you guys on the job site without this mask or these gloves, you will be fired, terminated from this job. Now, I ain't saying Dak Prescott should be fired for this. But if I'm Jerry Jones, and I think Stephen Jones gave a really, really, really weak response to this. If I'm those guys, you know what I'm saying to Dak? You're suspended.
Jerry.
You're suspended 1 or 2 games for this.
Jerry.
If there's football this year.
Jerry, what is the ultimate condemnation for him? That he wasn't alone? That he broke the rules? Because what if he didn't break the rules? What if, you know, the rule in Texas
rule,
is you can't
rules,
be...
The rules were broken. There was more than 10 people there, Will. Not six feet apart.
Well, I don't know that. How do you know that?
You see Zeke Elliott, he looks out of shape. He looks drunk there next to a girl.
I don't know what that has to do with anything. Hey, Dak says there was less than 10 people there.
That's
what do we do with
news.
That?
Read the article.
Read the article
on TMZ.
Oh, yeah. Talking about fake news. Jerry, I have one more question
for
you, okay?
TMZ, real news.
Yeah, DMZ, I know. It's where you go to for all your good stuff. Hey, Jerry, I have one more question for you, okay, man? You know I love when you call in. I don't want you to get too emotional here, but I have a question for you. Can you answer it for me?
Go ahead.
Just one on the way out.
Okay. No problem. Anything for you, Will.
How'd Nikki Numbers get his name?
Nikki Numbers is a big friend of mine, big Cowboys guy. He's my stat guy. When I want to pull up a number, I shoot him a text and say, Nikki, find this out for me. And within 30 minutes, I get a response on my phone. His name's Nikki Numbers.
Yeah, but you know what? Google works faster than 30 minutes. He might be need to be Nikki Google, you know? Then it's a little faster than Nikki Numbers. You can Google those numbers up a lot faster than 30 minutes, you know?
I like having a conversation. I don't like the internet.
I hear you. I like you calling in. I appreciate your call, Jerry, as always. All right, coming up, let's start this conversation about when we get everything back. Youth sports as well, but also let's play a game of over-under. Let's do some more win-loss totals from Vegas in the NFL. I'll tell you if they go over or under. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back. A 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Projected wins for NFL teams. Supreme Leader will fire them off at me, and I'll answer over or under. That's coming up on the Will Cain Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. But I actually want to take this call from Angela in North Carolina, because I think this is an important conversation to have. Go ahead, Angela.
Yes, I wanted to let you know that I would be very pissed off if Major League Baseball owners, NFL owners, anyone starts putting money in their pockets because they have to have sports start in the fall, in the winter, in the spring. I could care less. We are going through a major crisis in this country, in the world. If they start spending money for testing athletes instead of the general population, there is something really sick and wrong with that process.
Angela, it says here on my screen, you don't want to see sports come back until it's 100% safe. That's your belief?
No, I don't want them to come back too soon. I really miss my sports. I'm the biggest sports fan in the world, but I cannot see where there will be a good look for them to start putting athletes in hotels and testing them weekly so that they can get out on a field or a baseball diamond and play. That makes no sense because, again, you're spending money that you're spending testing money that should be going to the general population. They have to wait their turn. That's the way it is.
Okay.
Let me
respond, Angela, and you can stay on the line and you can respond to what I have to say, but take her down, Pat, because her connection's a little bit loud in the background there. Sounds like she's headed down the highway. This is where I started the show today. And this, I think, is the question you must address, the question you will address. You can tell me today that it's insensitive, and you can tell me today that you don't want to hear about it, but I promise you, sometime soon, you'll be having that conversation with yourself, your loved ones, and your job. And that is this. I'm going to put it bluntly, and then we'll back into why. What is an acceptable infection rate, and what is an acceptable mortality rate? Now, please understand, when I say acceptable, nobody thinks it's okay for anybody to die. Nobody thinks any of that. But what I am saying is, at some point, we will have to take some risks to get back to normal. Now, here's why I say that. First, Angela says athletes shouldn't have priority access to testing. They shouldn't have access to things that the general population doesn't have. I don't have belief that testing is going to get us to the promised land. This idea that Major League Baseball, which I appreciate them trying to be creative, or the Bundesliga in Germany, or any other league of testing and quarantining, I don't think it's going to work. I don't think it's going to work at all. The Bundesliga said they need 240 tests per game. That's for players, coaches, support staff, and television crews per game. And then you have to totally isolate from the general population. Let's use more specific words. Mom and dad and children. You cannot be with your family. At any point, if you fail one of those tests and tests are full
of false negatives, meaning you have it, but you test out negative. When you come back and it's clear you do have it, we have no idea, no ability to trace how many people you've been in touch with. The minute that happens, guess what happens? Your team gets quarantined. Your team gets shut down. Your league gets shut down. What you're doing is trying to live up to a 0% infection rate. You're trying to live up to the idea that nobody gets sick, and it's an impossible standard. It's 100% impossible. I don't think antibody tests, I don't think coronavirus testing, and I don't think quarantining will get you there, okay? Will not get you there. So now you get to a different proposition. Now your question goes like this here. If, as Angela, you've said, until it's 100% safe, what you're talking about is until a cure comes along, until a vaccine. That at best case scenario, 18 months. I said this earlier, and people don't seem to grasp this. We don't have a vaccine for HIV. Well, HIV is not the same thing. Yeah, it's not the same thing. I know it's transmitted differently. But what the important point to note is they're both viruses. And we've been trying to find a vaccine for that virus for decades. And we haven't. So the point is to apply here is, why are we assuming best case scenario of 18 months is going to be the way it works with coronavirus? It very well could go the same way AIDS has. Let it go forever. Who knows when we find a vaccine? Why are we so sure it's going to be 18 months? So to get to your zero, to your 100% safe, you're saying shut everything down until that happens. Okay? Even if 18 months becomes the best case scenario period, you're shutting everything down for 18 months? You realize what that is economically, even health-wise, right? In every single way. Leading me to the inevitable question, okay? That is, we're going to have a conversation. You will have it. You will have it. Even if you don't think you will have this. What's an acceptable risk? What's acceptable for the percentage of people to get infected? What's acceptable for people to die? When I say acceptable, I don't mean morally. I mean by choices, voluntary choices, because we make those choices every day. I don't know how fast you're driving, Angela, right now, but you're making a choice that carries a risk of death along with that. And the lower and slower you go, the lower that risk goes down. But you're making a choice, and we all will make choices at some point. We will make choices on what is an acceptable risk. Either that, or normal never, ever, ever exists again, and we don't even know what an economy is anymore. What do you say, Angela?
I agree with you. If you put it that way, it makes a lot more sense that we're going to have no sports for years. We have to have 100% no rate of anybody getting sick.
And that's why I don't think it will be the standard. You know, there's a lot of people, Angela, that I think on social media and other places are pretending that's the standard. And it's true that every life matters, but every life matters in every aspect of life, not just coronavirus. And yet we still take risks. I'm not telling you when. I'm not an expert. I don't know when the when is. And I don't know what the numbers are either. I don't know what it, to some extent, that's an individual choice for all of us on what the risk is. I just know that's the real conversation. The real conversation is not how many tests can we get? How well can we quarantine? The real conversation is when are we going to address what is an acceptable rate of risk? I appreciate the call, Angela. Thank you. All right. I've got more calls that want to address that. I promise. Let's do that. Nuno, let's do this really quickly. Let's run through some over-unders. I want to talk some sports. Vegas has over-unders out on NFL win totals. You put them to me, Nuno. Give me three. Pat, give it to me. A supreme leader, and I'll tell you over-under.
All right. So the one you didn't answer, Eagles at 9.5.
That's 10 wins. That's the Cowboys division.
Do it.
I'm going to go no. Under.
Oh, okay.
Pat, I think the Eagles are good. They're going to win 9. The question is, can they get to 10? I'm struggling because I think they're 10. I think both the Cowboys and the Eagles are roughly 10-win teams this coming season. I think one of them will win the division. The winner's going to have at least 10 wins. I think this is going to be a better year for the Cowboys than anybody anticipates. That puts the Cowboys at 10-6, the Eagles at 9-7. So the Eagles go under.
The Bucks at 9 wins.
Over. I believe. They won 7 games last year. Not only did they add Tom Brady, that defense is going to be better. It's just going to be better. And Tom Brady's going to bring so much out of that offense. I mean, if you don't turn the ball over 30 times, I think you add to your win total. I'm taking over. I think the Bucks win at least 10 games.
I won't ask you about the Cowboys because they were at 9.5. You said you think the winner will get 10, and obviously it would be the Cowboys. What about New England at 8.5?
New England at 8.5. That's tough. Jarrett Stidham or whoever's a quarterback, minus Tom Brady, what are the Patriots? I already said earlier that I think the Jets will be under 6.5. I think the Bills will be up there in the 9-10 win scenario. I think the Dolphins are going to be a little bit better, but I'm not writing the Patriots off. I think I'm going to go over. I'll give them 9 wins, the Patriots. It might get them the playoffs. It might not. They're not going to fall apart completely overnight. We have more over-unders and your calls coming up here on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Let's do some more over-unders. Vegas has win totals in the NFL. Do I think they're going over or under? That's coming up on the Will Cain Show. But let's finish off this conversation about what the world looks like, how we get sports back, what the risks we take, and what's going to happen. This is the one I'm also passionate about. What's going to happen to college sports? I'm not talking about football. I'm talking about non-revenue-generating sports and college in general. Let me hear from Lance in Arizona. What's up, Lance?
Hey, Will, love your show. First time calling in. So I've had this specific conversation with a lot of my closer friends and a bunch of my associates, coworkers, and such. I think it really boils down to what you personally think is acceptable, because this type of topic is very subjective in what you think would be an acceptable risk. I mean, that type of topic, you know, risk assessment is always very subjective, whether it be an insurance company or an individual or a state or a federal government, you know, whoever is looking at that. But what I basically come to the conclusion in this particular topic is you have to look at what type of risks you were taking before this whole thing happened and everyone started going a little crazy and getting in an uproar about the virus. Yes, it's a dangerous thing. It is, but aren't all viruses and bacteria, anything that can get you sick, aren't those all dangerous as well? Aren't you taking a risk every day before this happened of, you know, catching a cold or the flu or getting strep throat? I'm not saying it's the same as the flu. Everyone always misunderstands me when I throw the word flu in there. It's not the same as the flu. I'm just saying.
No, I got you.
Out there,
I understand.
You went to work every day, went to a game, and you could have gotten sick from anything else. And
so we can do a couple of things here, Lance. We can acknowledge, as you have, that this is a much greater rate of risk than the common flu or maybe other scenarios. But we can also say you are taking risks in every aspect of your life. What I think we've lost the message on a little bit is this idea that we're going to reduce it to a 0% risk, that we're going to conquer it, and then we go back to normal. And that ain't going to happen, man. I'm telling you, it's a debate today, but it won't be a debate at some point. We're all going to go back to normal and go forward with this risk. I think you're right. This one is pronounced in that we don't even quantify the other risks. We're ignorant of them, right? We're ignorant of the other risks that we take. We're not ignorant of this right now. But we will still at some point choose to take a risk. And that's the real, honest to God truth. Meaning, it isn't going to be some testing and quarantine regimen. It's not going to be a vaccine in the foreseeable future. It's going to be, I think, on two levels. A governmental risk assessment of, okay, yeah, well, this is what we think will happen if we put kids back in school. Is that an acceptable rate of risk? This will be what happens if we allow kids back on college campuses. This is what happens. We increase the infection rate by this much if we play college football, if we go into NFL stadiums. And that's the real rational, responsible, and inevitable conversation we're going to have. It will be an actuarial risk assessment. I promise you, at the governmental level and then at your individual level, you'll make those choices. You'll be like, should I or should I not go to a game this year? Should I or should I not go into the stadium? But one thing I guarantee we're not going to do, we're not going to stay isolated for the prospect of getting this down to zero. Gary from Montana. What's up, Gary?
Hey, Will. I was in the car. I listen to you intermittently. I can't say I'm the biggest fan in the world. I do like some of your points. I appreciate what you did to Stu Gotts the other day. I thought that was great. But I really had a hard time listening to the woman a couple of minutes ago who I thought made a very fair point. And then I think your counter to it was factually wrong, and I really think you just used the power of words that you do have to create a sort of a false story and a false logic. So I just really was disturbed, I guess, by your line of thinking and your line of logic.
Yes. I've got all of the prelude. And I'm not offended. Yes. You're not the biggest fan. You thought I used words in sneaky persuasive ways and all this. Just tell me where I'm wrong and please do it fairly quickly because I do have a commercial break coming up.
Well, life has always been a risk. There's never been a 0%. You can go back to the plague. So my point is I hate science. I'm not a big science guy. I teach history. That's what I do for a living. And I think I'm pretty good with words sometimes, but in this particular situation, science wins. Science wins. And all of the logic and all of the thinking and all of the choices and everything else that people are saying is wrong.
Okay, Gary, you've said nothing except science wins, and that's not even a point. That's a religious proposition. Tell me this, Gary. What does science win? No, it is. You don't realize it, but you're acting by faith on a cliche. You think you're not.
Because
you think you're being smart by using the word science in there.
We don't have the choice to live our lives the way we do.
Say it again.
We don't actually have the choice or the opportunity to live the way we want to live every day.
What does that mean?
Because of the incredible health risk that is happening right now. All viruses are not the same. Viruses are different. Gary, I'm telling you something.
I'm not the biggest fan of yours either after this conversation, but we're still going to have a cordial conversation about this. But you're
not actually getting somewhere, man.
You're not. Is your goal, and I'm down to a minute. Are you telling me science wins and nothing can be normal again until we get the rate of risk down to zero? Is that what you're telling me? Until it's zero.
No, Gary. Never.
Then what is it?
Never. We will never get down to zero. I agree with you 100% on that.
But
at this particular time, when we're trying to take care of people's health, we do need to put other things aside. And yes, that's going to be very destructive to the economy in every other place. I agree we'll never get to 0%, but now is not the time to be talking about getting back to anything that even looks
normal. I appreciate the call. That's sincere. It's also BS what you made a point, because it's always the time to prepare for the future. It's always the time to have that conversation. Always, Gary.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to the Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.